From sitting here?
Yes.
Okay, hi, I'm Zach. I just drove here from a vegan restaurant that was mediocre. Brushed my teeth, blue shirt, dog's cute.
Are you going to have one of these cupcakes?
I just ate one. That's why there's one missing. It was strawberry, but there's banana, there's chocolate marshmallow, and then that's black and white, which is chocolate and vanilla. I love for pastries. I love pastries. My favorite thing on the planet is pastries. I just feel like I want a pastry every day, a nice little a good one. Okay. Yeah, a Danish something.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is writer, actor, painter, and more, Zach Gruber. In the next hour, I'll be trying to crack Zach's crunchy protective shell and poke around his soft, sensitive underbelly. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and acsdigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is a funny guy with beautiful hands, Zach Gruber.
Thank you.
How you doing?
I'm great. I love the crunchy shell because it reminds me of a candy reference.
Well, that was the thing with the Tootsie Pops, right?
Yeah. Oh,
remember
right.
That old
yes.
thing about how many licks does it take to
right.
get to the center?
Right.
One, two, crunch.
Yeah. And I was thinking of the, whatever that is, the 100 grand bar, which is crunchy and that's got caramel in the middle. And, yeah. Oh, I love it so much.
Well, don't we? We all have protective shells.
Yes.
And yeah,
and they're crunchy.
Well, my job is to get beyond that.
Okay.
Sometimes they're scratchy.
Yeah, I guess.
Or poisonous.
Uh-huh.
They're all different kinds.
Yeah,
of
I'm not poisonous.
Mechanisms. I heard a lot of things about you, Zach, but nobody said he's poisonous.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I want to start with this thing. So you are an actor, writer, painter, teacher, and hand model.
Yes.
Your hands have an agent.
They have their own agent, and I'm represented from the elbows down.
But the rest of you has no commercial agent.
No, except my hand agent has said to me she'd like to represent me from the knees down.
Oh.
I think I'm going to be represented in segments, and she said my feet are so beautiful that I should be doing foot modeling too, foot commercials. You know, like socks and...
So that's a serious thing you're saying. You're not...
No, I'm completely serious. You can go on my IMDb. It's there.
So you're going to be represented from the elbows down and from the kneecaps down.
Yes.
And the rest of your head and torso...
She doesn't really care about the rest of me.
Nobody gives a crap about
no.
those parts.
They don't want to hear a word I have to say, just what my hands have to say.
So for our listeners, do you have any hand care tips that you could pass on?
You know, a lot of it is genetic. Mm-hmm. Thank God I have nice genes. I was told in my 20s and 30s that I have beautiful hands, and I always thought, well, that's a nice compliment, but I never thought it would be a marketable body part. Right. I mean, like, as a beautiful thing, okay, that's nice. And then one day, I was eating steak at a restaurant, and this man comes up to me from another table, dressed to the nines, and he said, "Are you a model?" And I said, "Like, on a runway?" And he said, "No, you have the perfect male hands. I'm the vice president of Procter & Gamble, and we own Olay." I said, "Like oil of Olay?" He said, "We just call it Olay now."
Yeah.
I said, "Oh." And he said, "You could be the male hands of Olay." I said, "Well, what would I have to do?" He said, "You'd have to get hand shots, and you'd have to get a hand agent." There are these agents called parts agents.
Uh-huh,
they just
really?
Represent body parts.
I did not know
and
that.
And everybody
that was
has a body part that's marketable, that you could make millions from, and you don't even know it, that's perfect. Everybody.
I wonder what
you could be
is
very unattractive and have the most beautiful ears, you know.
Sure.
So I
so now I have some homework.
Yes.
I got to figure out what that is for me.
You just ask maybe some people that you trust.
Well, or what part of me might anybody give a crap about?
I'm looking at you and there's a lot of parts I see just on your neck up that's
yeah.
really good.
Okay. Like the bridge of my nose?
Nose, teeth?
Teeth, yeah, teeth maybe.
Your mouth is great.
Yeah. I have great teeth for radio. I've always heard that.
I like your whole head.
Yeah, okay. And now let me see your hands.
Okay. So here's the palms.
Yep.
And here's the back.
Yep.
Okay.
See, now, I'm just to have to mention, because this is radio.
Okay.
And maybe I'll take a picture of your hands while we're talking. But, you know, when somebody says, no, put them down here.
Okay.
You have beautiful hands.
Uh-huh.
They're masculine hands. I mean,
they are.
Like they're
not women's hands.
Women's hands. Or,
and by the way, in recent years, some hair has grown onto the back of my hand.
Uh-oh.
It's very faint. And believe me, I use the little remover. What is that? Nair, you know, with a little
yeah.
cream and you scrape
right.
it off.
So you have your
I don't enjoy doing that.
Back of your hands waxed. Just, I mean...
That I do it myself.
You can do it yourself. Yeah.
I hate waxing, by the way. I did it once and it was so awful. I hated it. But no, my hands are pretty like not veiny, not porous, not, you know, messed up.
Yeah.
And we do mess up our hands because we're people and we're using them all the time. You don't even, you know, as a child, you could have cut yourself badly or, I mean, all sorts of things. And I just went through life and somehow ended up with lovely,
beautiful,
nice,
beautiful hands. Okay.
That now I'm, you know, seen in Target commercials, uh-huh. Joe's Crab Shack commercials.
All right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Joe's Crab Shack. Yeah. I mean, fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's switch the subject.
Okay.
I just wanted to ask about that. You're writing now for the Huffington Post.
Yes.
Regularly. What do you write for them? Entertainment.
I've written probably about 200 articles for them now. And you can see my articles. They're housed on the Huffington Post, of course. Type in my name, Zach Gruber, which is X-A-Q-U-E is my first name.
We're going to get to
unusual.
That.
Unusual.
Yeah.
Gruber, G-R-U-B-E-R. Or go to ZachGruber.com and my articles are housed there too. But I love writing and I mostly write entertainment, arts-related articles. I am very interested in creative people that are doing cool stuff from the ground up. I don't tend to want to write about big budget stuff because that has enough press. You know, like...
So you got an example of something recently that you liked?
In the last year, I've written a huge wide range of pieces, as I always do. And it's not all on arts and entertainment. Sometimes I write about food. Sometimes I write about, you know, charities or... There are many subjects that interest me. I don't write about politics ever. And I don't really write about sports unless it's something to do with the Olympics, which I love.
So they give you carte blanche and say, write stuff, and if we like it, we'll print it. They
yes,
like you.
Yeah.
So you don't have a beat there. They don't say, please
no,
go with this.
No, I don't. And also...
That sounds perfect.
It's really great. Also, what I like is, because they've come to really trust me so much, I was promoted to a place, I don't even know what you call it, but where I can just submit the article, and it bypasses the editors, and they just put it up automatically, which is very lovely.
I don't know what that's called, but
I don't know what that's called,
like,
but I really enjoy that. Yeah,
it's
very nice. It's very instantaneous.
Yeah. All right.
But that being said, I mean, it takes a lot of work to write an article, sure. And so I don't take on everything. I'm very, very picky, and I am very busy. So I love doing it, though.
All right.
Here and there.
Well, I have some other writing questions.
Okay.
I noticed a couple. I noticed in your credits that one of the credits is that you wrote Ryan Seacrest's questions for the Stars on live from the red carpet, and my question for you is, what makes a good question for that? What do you need to
for E? The answer would be something to do with sex, exercising, dieting, who's your crush, fashion related stuff, little embarrassing tidbits. You know, I'm not, when I'm writing for E! Live from the Red Carpet, I'm not writing for, you know, the Wall Street Journal.
Sure.
So if I'm going to write five questions for a nominee, let's say it's for the Grammys and it's Robert Plant, they want to hear, Robert Plant, who's your crush right now? Is it Kim Kardashian or, you know, and it, to me, makes me cringe, this kind of level of question. Because I want to find out so much more from Robert Plant.
Right.
And of course, I'm a music lover, and I have a great appreciation and love for film, too. So if I'm writing five questions for Julie Andrews, I have so many deep, incredible things I want to ask her, and the stuff they make me write to ask is just, you know, you have to dumb it down.
Not personally that interesting.
Yeah, but it's good TV.
Sure.
Because it's in the moment. It's just
sure.
Sparkle quick, and then it's over,
and
it gets a little giggle, and then they move on.
And it's on brand for them. You know,
it's on brand for them, which is their brand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, do you have a way of asking questions, you personally? I mean, do you have like a technique of... Because I'm now asking questions,
and
so I'm asking you to kind of make
How
me
do
smart.
I ask questions?
Yeah.
You know, I'm very interested in people. I am very inquisitive. I probably ask way too many questions when I meet people. And when I'm in a restaurant and the waiter comes over, I just want to ask 50 questions to that waiter. I want to know their name. I want to know where they're from. I want to know what they've eaten on the menu that they like. Why do they like it? Why do they not like this? Like, I'm, you know, I sit with my friends who are waiters when we go out to eat, and they go, you're a nightmare customer. You should not be asking your waiter all these questions. They have so many tables. I said, I know. So I've really pared it down. But I just shoot from the hip and ask respectful, interesting questions.
And you're curious about
people. I am very curious.
You like people. So
I do.
I saw another entertainment industry job that you had was you were on-set assistant to Henry Winkler at the Hollywood Squares.
Mm-hmm. That was my first job.
What is that job? What do you do as the assistant to somebody who's on Hollywood Squares?
Okay, that was my first really kind of TV production job that I could call mom and say, this is what I'm doing. Because before that, I had some dumb, very thankless jobs that I didn't want to talk about. Yeah. But this, working for Henry Winkler was cool. Not just because he was the Bonds, but because, oh my gosh, he's so wonderful and well-known, and I really love the man. And I worked for Michael Levitt and Henry Winkler. Michael and Henry are production partners and have been for years. And so I was their joint assistant, and what I was in charge of was basically the same sort of, you know, what an agent's assistant would be doing. Scheduling lunches, answering phones, making sure they're getting to their meetings on time, making sure, you know, there were times in the middle of the day if it got really hectic and he had some time that he could, like, lay down. He had a couch in his office. He'd say, I'm going to just lay down for the next half hour. Don't have anybody knock on my door. And I'd say, okay. So it was like, close the door, time to lay down in the middle of the day. Everyone should take a nap, I think.
I think that that's good. Well, I ask just because it's Hollywood Squares.
Oh, and Hollywood Squares would tape on Saturdays and Sundays at CBS TV City there on Beverly in Los Angeles. And it was a blast because the way Hollywood Squares was, if people out there don't know, is there were
everybody knows.
Tic-tac-toe, nine celebrities, knows. Constantly changing array of celebrities.
Yeah, yeah.
Wild, colorful, eclectic celebrities.
That was the whole show.
And it was so funny and different. And I wish it was still on TV. It was really, really very fun. And to see this collection, and they were usually kind of like older, mm-hmm. like Nicole Kidman wouldn't be on Hollywood Squares, but Little Richard would be, and Charo, and Phyllis Diller, and the
Buddy,
Muppets.
Buddy Hackett. All those guys.
And, well, I think I don't know if he was still alive when I was on it. I did it in 2003 and 2004, which were the very last two seasons of Hollywood Squares. And a little factoid about me is
yes.
I was the very last contestant ever on Hollywood Squares.
No.
Yes, for the final week of the show, they had this thing called Staff Appreciation Week. And they had all the people who work in the production office who wanted to be a contestant have a shot at being a contestant for charity. So all the money would go to the charity of your choice. You wouldn't keep it. And it was a thrill for me because my cousin has cystic fibrosis. I wanted it all to go to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. And it was a sort of names in a hat kind of lottery. And they picked it out of the hat and they said, Zach Gruber is next. Well, there was about 10 minutes left in the very final episode ever of Hollywood Squares. Tom Bergeron was the host. And they said, Zach, you're on. It was right after a commercial break. And I said, hi, I'm Zach Gruber. I'm the executive assistant. I'm here. I'm from Sudbury, Massachusetts. And I'm playing for Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. And, you know, and I thought, oh my gosh, I actually am going to be the final contestant of all time. And two questions into the game, Tom Bergeron goes, well, that's it for the series, everybody. Thank you, Zach. We're giving you $5,000 for playing because you didn't get to finish your game to cystic fibrosis. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. I'm the very last person ever to stand here as a contestant on this decades-long legendary show.
All right, well, maybe someday that will be a question. A test somewhere. Who's
I have to get that. I have to get that clip and somehow upload it to YouTube or something because I do have that clip of me on there.
Well, if you ever become massively famous, it'll be a much better story.
Yes, it will.
Unfortunately,
yeah. No, it would be a great story.
All right, I got something else for you.
Okay.
Now I got to ask about your name.
Okay. Right?
Because you spell it X A Q U E.
Yes.
Zach.
Yes.
Is that a spelling that is in use anywhere in the world? Did you make that up? Did your parents make that up? What the hell's going on there? I mean, I can't be the only guy that's ever said, what are you doing?
No, I'm asked that question every day of my life.
Of course.
Probably a couple times a day, maybe.
Yes,
even.
Okay.
It stumps people. People don't know if it's if I'm Chinese, because in China it's pronounced Shashui. In Mexico it's pronounced Hakwei. People don't know if I'm female, like Shake, like Shaka, like Shaka Khan.
Absolutely.
People don't know what I might be.
I went through all those things before.
And the truth of the matter is, Zach, X-A-Q-U-E, is my real name. It's on my driver's license. It's on my social security card.
Okay.
It's a name that is an old family name. And my grandfather, six or seven generations ago, was Franz X. Gruber, who wrote Silent Night, Holy Night. Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht,
Alles.
From Austria. And his middle name was actually Xavier.
Yes.
But Zach was derived out of that. So it's my name.
It's you.
It's and yours. It's me. And it's not short for Zachariah, and it's not... I respond to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm never upset or offended by how people botch it up. It's very amusing.
Well, because they would naturally do that. What I discovered first and foremost is that it's spell check hell.
It is.
That must irritate you every day. You got to unspell check yourself.
It is. Although I tend to just sign off on emails with an X.
That would do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other interesting part, on this show I like to anagram stuff. People's names, the name of their production company, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, I tried Zach Gruber and I didn't get anything useful.
That's tricky.
On the other hand,
okay.
What I realized when I look at it, like you say, it could be spelled. How do you say it in Mandarin or Chinese?
Shashui.
Shashui. And then in Spanish, it could be something.
Hakwei.
But if it's X-A-Q-U-E, it could even be Jacques.
It could be Jacques, and I love that.
Or it could be even like Shecky.
Oh, I like that.
Shecky.
I've been called that, actually. I've been called Shecky.
And then I was like, Gruber is one letter away from Gruner, which is green. So you're like almost Shecky Green. So you're one imaginary step and one linguistic step away from being a 90-year-old stand-up comic from Brooklyn.
Is that what Shecky means?
Well, Shecky Green is an old-style comic. I mean, he is. He's 90.
Oh, that's right.
Stand-up. I'm not sure if he's from Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know Shecky Green?
I do know the name.
That guy?
Yes, I do.
That's as close as I can.
Well, that's
get.
Very...
Shecky
that's
Green.
Fascinating. My last name, Gruber, means one who digs ditches in the ground or digs in the ground. My family emblem is a shovel or a spade. And my ancestors in Austria were digging perhaps mines, perhaps graves, perhaps gardening. I'm not sure what they were digging, but they were in that earth,
okay,
scooping it up.
Well, is that where the word grub comes from? Because the grub is
something
you dig out of the ground.
I'm curious. I'd never thought of that.
Gruber, somebody that's digging up worms or gardeners. I don't know.
Very interesting. I like being on the ground, by the way.
Okay.
As opposed to like other places,
falling
like
from the
water,
sky.
Air. No, I don't like roller coasters.
Uh-huh.
I'm not 100% comfortable on boats or ships. I can do it, but I love the ground.
Yeah. All right.
And I'm an earth sign, so it all makes sense.
I never heard it put like that. I don't like roller coasters or boats, but airplanes, but on the ground. What's your sign?
Virgo.
Virgo. Okay, that's earth. Tell us a little bit about your painting, because you do that a lot.
I love painting. Yeah. It's my first love. I've been painting since I'm told two or three, drawing and painting. And I honestly could be just very happy all day, every day, painting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is just my passion.
Yeah.
Writing, I hate to say this, if writing was a person sitting at this table and painting was another person, I'd hate to say, I like painting better. But I love writing too.
Sure.
It's a close second.
So it's like the husband and wife you're friends with and you like one more than the other one. If they got divorced, you definitely
But you really know. Do love them both.
Sure, but it's but if they split up, you know where you would go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Painting to me is pure pleasure. Writing to me is pleasure, but there's you know, it can be challenging, and it's a different animal. But anyway, I went to Pratt Institute in Brooklyn to study drawing after high school.
Oh, I used to live in that neighborhood in Fort Greene.
Oh, my gosh.
In the late 80s, it was not a fashionable neighborhood
not
then.
Not at all.
Now it's
It
like
was just gloomy homicides, you know. Yeah. Oh, you didn't want to go there.
No, now it's
you didn't want to bring your kid there and drop him off and say, have fun for 4 years. My mother was crying. She was a wreck. So I loved it, though. I mean, thank God I went to school in New York. And I loved that I got to see the gritty New York just before it changed. Because was it ever interesting?
Yeah.
But
it's definitely changed.
I mean, yeah. But I still love New York. I would move back there. I absolutely love it.
You paint a lot from nature.
My primary subject matter the past many years has been watercolor of landscapes, watercolor of the surface of ponds, of trails going into the woods, of close-up of trees, of leaves and branches, flowers.
I saw something recent or a few months ago that I liked, which was branches, leaves, birds.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Kind of
blending
sure
together.
Where one began and the other one.
I love doing this stuff. That painting, I know the one you're talking about, it was called Birds in the Bougainvillea, and it sold to Jack Kenny, who's a TV producer, and I was so touched. He just saw it and wrote me and said, I want to buy that. And since then, other people have said, I want to buy that. I'm like, oh, well, it's sold. I can paint more. I love birds. I love painting birds.
Give people the web address again.
Because it is zachgruber.com, ZachGruber.com. You can see my watercolors. And I do a lot of mixed media and drawings on there, too.
Yeah,
and I don't just paint watercolor, even though it is my favorite medium. I do acrylic and oil also. I'm a big fan of photography too. So really, art for me is a many splendored thing.
Yes.
People say, what's your medium? And I go, what isn't? I just really want to try it all. Well, do it all.
Yeah, that's
I don't work in bronze, but someday I'd like to.
I want to mix it up now.
Yeah, mix it up.
I want to ask a serious question.
Okay.
It's a comedy show.
Okay.
By all accounts, you seem like a really nice guy.
I am.
I checked out your Facebook. You seem a little embarrassed. You're sheepish.
I know. I know.
Do people give you a hard time about it? They tease you about it?
Do they tease me about it? I think that my friends know that I am a genuinely contented, happy, peaceful, helpful person. So they find refuge in that with me. And they turn to me for all sorts of things. And I really love that. That I kind of, for them, represent a sort of priestly, you know, gentle, helpful soul.
But when I said it, you kind of looked down with either...
Because I was raised that you stay humble and you stay with your head to the ground and that you stay very modest. To this day, my mother, who I'm very close with, says, never brag, never boast, never talk about yourself, never say, I'm doing this and it's so great. Never do that, like... I don't know that she'd even love the fact I'm doing an interview right now because it would be too much about me, you know?
Well, that's
so when people say nice things, I blush a little like an old-fashioned cartoon. But
all right, well, that's not the question. Here's the question.
Yes.
Do you have any advice for maintaining your kind of calm center when other people are assholes?
Here's what I would do. I don't explode at people, and I really rarely get angry. I have been in those shoes where a very troubled soul pulls you into their web of trouble, and then you end up feeling exhausted, drained, upset. I hate to use the word religious, but I guess I am religious. I have a rosary around my neck right now. I pray a lot, and I am a believer, and I feel like that faith that I have in, you know, God, and God comes in many forms, really was a source of strength. It really was. And I know the world is full of troubles and there's plenty of atheists and non-believers out there, but you have to have something that is your center that's bigger than you. Hmm. And I really felt tremendous strength turning to God, going to church, and I'm not a religious fanatic and I don't even usually talk about it, but that probably was a real quiet source of help for me. I also have a great family, and I have very good friends, so I could turn away from the dark and turn towards light pretty easily because I had still a lot of light in my life.
All right, I got something else. Mm-hmm. You wrote a book about Rhode Island.
I did. I love Rhode Island.
Yeah, why? Why write a book about Rhode Island?
That's what everyone says. I lived in Rhode Island from 1994 to 2000 and fell completely in love with the state. I thought, how can 30 towns be a state? Honestly, I mean, 30 towns has as much of a say in our Senate as California. And, you know, when they break down the, you know, whether it's election night or whatever it be, look at our flag. There's 50 stars. Rhode Island's is as big as California's or New York. I mean, it's a tiny little space. And it's very important as equally as any other state.
And so what is your book about?
My book is about this little girl named Rhoda from Rhode Island. It was written for third graders and up. She's a modern-day girl who doesn't really care about history. She goes on a sort of history tour of a Newport, Rhode Island mansion, which is a beautiful town. If anyone out there ever wants to check out Rhode Island, go to Newport. And she falls back in time in a sort of Alice in Wonderland way, where she's suddenly in the year 1636, when the very first Europeans were arriving to Rhode Island. And she meets a little boy named Little Wave of the Wampanoag tribe, which was what was living there. And they're still there, actually, in smaller numbers, but they're there. And she learns about history by traveling on this giant quahog shell, which is like a huge clam shell, but it's like bathtub size, big enough for two children to fit in. And they travel through the centuries of Rhode Island's history, learning all about the state and how it became a state and the good and the bad and the heroes and heroines and wonderful history that I love. And one thing that I particularly am fascinated about Rhode Island is it was formed by vagrants and rebels and people who were not good enough for Massachusetts in the Puritan days.
So Rhode Island is like the Australia to Massachusetts.
Of America.
They threw people out of
if you were places. They used to say if you were too good for Massachusetts, you went to Connecticut. If you were not good enough, you went to Rhode Island. And those were your choices. And Rhode Island has the nation's first synagogue. It has the nation's first Baptist church. These were religions that were very fringe and were not mainstream or well-liked. It was founded by people who did not want to buy into the Puritans' ways. They wanted to have religious freedom. And they created on this small, relatively, I've biked around all of Rhode Island in a day, wonderful, beautiful state. I mean, it's, I think, 60% forested or more. It's absolutely beautiful. Most people don't think about it ever, but boy, is it a history.
No, I don't think about it. I mean, less than Canada, we think about Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Well, the book sounds great.
It has its own cuisines. It has its own, I swear, accents.
Really?
I have
is
a theory.
The cuisine, I mean...
It's because it's a very intensely Portuguese population.
Yeah, there are a lot of Portuguese people up and down the coast there. Yeah.
And it is the nation's highest concentration of Portuguese, that their influence of cooking has gone into the seafood, has gone into all these dishes that I can't find in Los Angeles for sure, or most other parts of the country. And I miss some of those dishes. Just beautiful food. Oh, my gosh.
I want to go to Rhode Island.
It's a place worth checking out. It really is.
Here's another question.
Okay.
As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
Are you telling me or asking me?
Well, you know, I'm from Philadelphia, so when I ask a question, it sounds like I'm just making a statement.
Did I have one, true or false? I'm going to say... This is a really hard question, because... I would say false, but I think the actual answer is true. And it's a very deep answer. Shall I share?
Sure.
So when I was born, I was supposed to be twins. And my twin never was born. They have no idea what happened to the twin. There was no, you know, stillborn twin. There was nothing. It was just me.
So in utero, there were two of you.
There were two of us. There were two heartbeats. There were two bags of water that broke when my mother gave birth.
But only you came out.
And only I came out.
And so the other...
is a complete mystery.
Disappeared.
Yeah.
Didn't come out.
Right.
Didn't stay in.
Decades later,
okay.
I went to see... I didn't go to see a psychic. I was at a party where a psychic was doing readings. And she said, come here, I need to do your reading. And I thought, oh, Lord. And she turns over her tarot cards, and the very first thing she says to me is, you were a twin. And I said, no, I wasn't. And she said, yes, you were. And she's very adamant. And I said, actually, I was. And it's something I'd been told over the years, but it never really stayed with me. And I thought, and she said, this twin is very powerful in your life. It's a boy. It was going to be a boy. And he is your guardian angel. He is completely with you. He guides you. He attracts things to you. He is with you constantly. He protects you from bad things happening. You have no idea how powerful he is in your life. And so when you say imaginary friend, and I talk to myself all the time. I talk to myself driving over here on the freeway. I thought, once in a while I go, oh my gosh, people must think I'm nuts. But in this day and age, you can talk to yourself because everyone has those little earphone things. So it's not as nutty, but maybe he was an imaginary friend in a weird way that I was not aware of.
Well, the normal question that I ask is this, and it says, as a child, you had an imaginary friend. Your imaginary friend also had an imaginary friend. Where are they now?
Oh. Okay.
Anything else come up for you?
Where are they now? Where are they now? I would say they're right here with me still. They're right here with me. I've never gone into the age of not believing. I've always stayed very much in a lovely, you know, Disney-esque happy world of talking animals and things. I sort of live in that world.
Well, I'm going to say, or like a Waldorf school kid. So the world of imagination, the childhood world.
The world of imagination is the world I inhabit.
Gullibility, you know,
yes, artists. I'm very gullible.
You are happy to remain there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not even by choice. It's who I am. It's really who I am.
As a child, you had an imaginary friend. Your imaginary friend also had an imaginary friend. Is that
would be
fire,
me?
Anything? So your imaginary friend's imaginary friend is you.
Yes.
I see. So you're both here.
Yes.
Together.
Yeah.
I understand. Okay. All right. That's interesting.
It's an interesting question.
Yeah. Right. Here's another one like that. how old were you when you first ran away from home?
Well, if you mean run away from home in a way that I was conscious and really upset and wanting to run away from home, not just in a childlike playing off and not wanting to come back kind of happy way. It's funny. I actually did run away from home at age, I was probably maybe 19. And I was, whatever my parents were doing, they were driving me crazy. And I got in the car and I said, I'm running away from home at 19. And I drove to the record store because record store.
Did you take your parents' car?
I think I did.
Okay, just check.
Okay, yeah. So I went to the record store, and it was back in the vinyl days. And I walk in a record store, and I can get lost for a long time. And so I was in there, and I thought, I suddenly went into my happy place. I'm looking at all the albums I want to buy and all the music I want to listen to. And then who walks into the record store but my mom and dad? And they go, and I said, I ran away from you. And they said, well, we knew you'd be here. And I said, well, how would you know? And they said, well, where else would you go? And I thought, wow, I'm so easy to find. I'm not a good runaway. It was so predictable. I would go to the record store. You know, it was a small town.
And then they bought you ice cream and you all went home.
And then we all went home.
Yeah.
And then we had we patched it all up. It couldn't have been too horrible.
Yeah.
So
that's 19. That was your thing. You didn't get very far.
No, I didn't. But I did get to the record store. I think I bought some really good albums. Mm-hmm.
A horrible story. Yeah, I bought some really good records. You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual.
Me?
What is it?
Well,
confess.
No, here's a very funny true thing that yes. I can't explain, but I will try. Every time I go to sleep, it is believed by my friends and family and even celebrities that I've been the assistant to that when I fall asleep, I release sleeping powers, like magic powers that only come alive after I've fallen asleep. And it's almost like an oral sleeping pill, and it puts everyone to sleep like the poppies in The Wizard of Oz, who is sleeping in the same room or vicinity as me.
So you fall asleep, and it makes other people fall asleep.
Yes. Now, I wasn't even aware of this until, like, my 30s.
Well, because you go to sleep first, and then...
Right. And then people said, you know, ever since you came over, I've been sleeping better. And my mother would say that when I'd go home from, you know, to visit her, or... I was a celebrity personal assistant here in Hollywood, and there were some late nights where she'd just say, just sleep over, just sleep on the couch, and I'd say, okay, I don't want to drive home, and an Oscar-nominated actress, and I'd sleep on the couch, and she was an insomniac, and then in the morning she got up and she said, what you have I've only heard of in legend. You have sleeping powers. When you fall asleep, everyone around you falls asleep and sleeps through the night. And she said, I had the best night's sleep last night. She goes, I will pay you $32 a night if you stay over here and just sleep every night. I said, $32? If I have
that's
magic powers,
an hour. That's,
I know,
that's not even minimum
like
wage.
Prostitutes who sleep, yeah, you know, with you get paid more than that, I think. I don't know. But yeah, I know. So it was a very specific number. And then I made some money, but again, I didn't like modeling my hands. I didn't know sleeping was a marketable skill. And I just turned out to be such a good sleeper. And I sleep like a vampire in a coffin. You know, I just go back and I don't move. I like the buzz of a soft
like
noise.
Noise.
Something.
Okay.
And noise is the wrong word, but just like a sound that...
White noise.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, black noise matters too.
Ooh, black noise.
Black
I never
noise
heard
matters.
That term.
But
it's a power that seems to benefit others more than me.
Well, you get an afterglow.
I do.
You get a little afterglow. So it either comes from your body physically or spiritually is generated there, or it's coming from some other place through you, and as you're asleep, it says, "Here's it's time to do my work."
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It is good.
Yeah.
So I'm helpful to people even when I'm sleeping.
Especially when you're sleeping.
I put people to sleep. That's not a good thing to say if you're trying to carve out a career as a writer.
Well,
I put people to sleep.
No, I mean, I didn't realize how fascinating you are. You're valuable from the elbows to your fingertips.
Yeah.
You make money, or you can make money, from your knees to your toes.
I could.
And when you're asleep, you are arguably uniquely qualified to help people.
Yes, in a quiet way.
In a very quiet way.
Yeah, I don't even snore, I'm told.
Don't even snore. That's, I see infomercial coming on. Red television infomercial?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
But you wouldn't be yelling, you'd be like kind of soothing.
Yes.
Soothing. Hi, I'm Zach Huber.
Yeah.
You have trouble falling asleep. Invite me over. I can help.
It's basically an invite me over thing. Yeah. Because I can't put it in a pill.
No, it's got to be personally delivered. So
right.
It's like Netflix and chill, but somehow better.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Yeah.
Much better.
But, well, depending on what you need more of.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you got coming up? You got anything to plug, promote, announce, brag about? I know your mom will be a little disappointed, but...
Oh, that's hilarious.
You're in the entertainment business, and this is a show where you come on and talk about... Here's where to see you, hear you, find out more.
Yes. Well, in the very near future, I'm going to be appearing in Malibu on Sunday at Tales by the Sea, telling a story about my life. The theme is God Sends. It's free to the public. A very wonderful event that they do at the Malibu Swim Club at 4 o'clock on Sunday. In the long term, I have a feature film that I wrote, which is actually... part of the reason I'm here visiting Los Angeles right now is to... do meetings to prepare for that. We hopefully will be shooting this summer.
Wow. All right. So it's green lit. I mean, you got money if you're...
We have money.
You're ready to go. Fantastic.
And we are, you know, there's a lot of pieces you have to put into place before you go into production on a film, but they're all falling into place.
Okay. Well, next and time you come on, you can tell us more about
it. I shall.
But is it a drama, comedy,
it's
horror?
It's a total comedy about my adventures working for a certain Oscar-nominated actress, the one who I put to sleep. And she hired me on the spot to be her assistant, and she's going to play herself.
Wow.
In the film.
Okay, so now we'll
it's very exciting. It's okay, fun. Well, I love comedy because I think the world needs to laugh a lot more.
Yeah.
It's only medicinal. It's only wonderful. Only good things can come from laughing.
Well, they have the
laughing. Unless you're laughing in a like a funeral or somewhere where you shouldn't be laughing. But otherwise, it's a very, you know.
Well, they have the laughter yoga, right? You've heard about that?
No.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all around. It can't just be here.
It must just be here. I've never heard of it.
It's laughter yoga. People get together and they do some yogic breathing and just say, we'll start laughing. And so the kind of there's a mild percussive thing that happens with your breath when you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And it releases tension in your body. It releases endorphins.
I love that.
With a group of people, at some point, sometimes it just starts to get out of control. And then, yeah, you can laugh your way to a better
physical place.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lyrics, which is by Joni Mitchell, she has a song and she sings, laughing and crying is the same release. And it's very true.
Yeah.
I mean, crying is a wonderful thing. Maybe not why you're crying, but like it, you release.
Yeah.
And so crying yoga might be another thing too. I don't know.
There's Primal Scream, which is like screaming
yoga.
Oh,
I guess, yeah.
Right? So that's screaming yoga.
Right.
And we have laughing yoga, so yeah, mm-hmm. crying.
Okay.
Yeah. I have one question left.
Okay.
Did we mention the cupcakes that you brought me, cupcakes?
We didn't mention them,
you're
no.
The first guest to bring any kind of sweets or cupcakes.
I would have brought you four, but I ate one on the way over. I'm so sorry. I'm not a good... I'm not good when it comes to resisting pastry.
You could have gotten the box that only held two and then said, just give me one. I'm going to eat this in the car. I would have never known, but thank you.
Yeah. You look really good. I ate the strawberry one, which was probably the least significant of those four. So you're still in pretty good shape. Okay.
All right. Oh, the banana one? Is that like a...
It's like almost like a banana
sour
cake.
Sour cream frosting?
But it's like,
like,
yes,
a banana cake?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I think you'll love that.
Well, I was like, banana, but then...
Yeah.
Okay. All right, here's my last question. I have this thing. 20 years ago, I realized that if I wanted to really make a contribution to the world, the way I was going to do it was to tell my friends and family, tell them that they could hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime. And without warning.
A cream pie.
Whatever they want.
Okay.
You want to hit me in the face with a pie, it's always okay.
Okay.
Go at it. You are going to make this same offer. They get to throw it with love. You get to receive it with love. My question is, who would you like to throw this pie?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'll pick someone from within my lifetime rather than go back to like Moses or something. I think that I'm not going to pick someone I personally know because it's not as interesting to me. It's more interesting if I pick someone who I admire from afar. Just throw a pie in my face. I would have a very hard time throwing a pie in her face, though. I would have a very hard time doing that. I probably wouldn't do that. But if she were to throw a pie in my face, I'd probably just be so happy.
I'm having a problem with the pronouns. Who are we talking about?
We're talking about Annie Lennox.
Annie Lennox.
I'm completely in love with her. I have been in love with her from the very first second I ever heard her voice sing Sweet Dreams. The very first time I ever saw that video, she completely opened up my whole world to music and color and, you know, expression and everything. And I follow her, what she's doing on Twitter, and she doesn't release albums very often, but... Oh my gosh, I love everything about her. If she threw a pie in my face, and it would have to be a cream pie because I don't want it to be, I don't want it to hurt. But cream is good. Yeah, I'll just lick it off. And it wouldn't be the first time someone threw a cream pie in my face. It'd be the second time, but this one would be delightful. And then we could laugh, and then we could talk, and then we would probably talk for hours and just be great friends. Oh, I would love that. Somehow, that sounds so absurd and crazy, but it might be really great.
Yeah. And what if she said, you know what, Zach, I'd love to receive a pie from you as well.
Oh my gosh. In my book, that'd be almost like Gandhi saying that. And I would say, I don't think I can. I don't think I can. I don't think I can. And she's like, please, please. I would go, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I don't know. It would be hard. Maybe I'd rather do like a whipped cream can and just go like that on her face because it would be less, you know, thing smashing against it. So I don't know, because I just love her face too much.
Yeah. Okay. All right, it's an interesting, but this is the thing. What happened?
Never had this conversation before. Yeah. A pie in the face with love.
Exactly.
That's a really, really wonderful new concept.
If you would like to do this, I have a Facebook page called Pie Yourself Free.
Really?
I have little cards where I'll give you one where you can hand it out to people and say, hey, it's always okay to hit me in the face with a pie.
Oh my gosh. So
only if you're going to do it only with friends, family. You can control who you give this permission to.
Right, okay.
All right, it's never just open season on Zach, ba-boom. No, that would be dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Right.
So you think about it.
Okay.
If you decide to do this to receive a pie, let us know, because it's like an hour research project. And I'm curious what happens for other people. What else we got? Anything else? What did I forget?
What else? I love my friends and family. I'm
boring.
A happy person.
Boring. The show is about the dark side of comedy. I got you to say you almost ran away, and like that was the darkest thing that we got.
And it wasn't even that horribly dark.
You went to the record store and you bought like a
Annie
Lennox album.
Yes, I did. Oh my gosh, I'm sure I bought Savage. Let me think. What else did I do that was dark? Somewhere in there, there's got to be darkness.
I don't think there is. I mean, that's your whole spiel. People are like randomly saying, "Zach, I'm so glad you exist. You brighten my world. I don't even ever see you. Just knowing that you're out there helps."
Yeah.
No, there's no darkness, really.
Okay.
Or very little.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would like to thank my guest, the multi-hyphenated creative powerhouse, Zach Gruber, for coming in this week.
Thank you.
I wrote that ahead of time, but I, in case I figured like it wasn't true.
It's funny that you called me an actor, because I've never called myself an actor ever.
Haven't you been an actor? Not really.
I have. I mean, I acted on Hell's Kitchen for a few seasons as a crazy party planner, but that was a happenstance. I've never called myself an actor, but I guess we're all actors.
Well, you're not an actor. You're a multi-hyphenated creative powerhouse.
Okay.
If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug.
I love that.
Right?
That's cool.
They're about $20 because I got to get them privately
printed. Okay.
You can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. Just for the record, no one listening to the show, if there is anyone listening to the show, has ever contacted me about one of these coffee mugs. But there's still time.
I will.
Yeah. We've only been doing it a few months. Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA, although today we're in Pasadena. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We will be back. I'll be back next week.
Good.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
You'll still be here, but you won't be here. All right. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.